You are listening to Punk News Podcast episode 572.5, the John and Ricky Stayed Home episode.
I don't know how it started. I suppose it was about the 10th grade. I'd never bought much music. I just listened to whatever was played. But there was classic rock there on the radio, and it was blowing my mind. And it was all the records no one wanted now, so they were easy to find. So I started getting LPs. They only cost a little, and these LPs were all the ones I needed from the 60s. With psychedelic art on all the great sleeves. Much cooler and much cheaper than the CDs. And that's the way I caught the disease. I caught the disease for LPs. There wasn't any internet. A lot of times you just took a shot. Pretty soon you figured out which record would be awesome or not. If the year was from the 60s, it was probably good bang for your buck. If the year was from the 80s, it was guaranteed to totally suck. I started learning about the LPs, and that's my education just cost low fees. $3 for this Dylan record, OES Breeze, and the Cream and Rolling Stones and Arlo Guthrie's. A giant treasure trove was all for pennies, and that's the way I caught the disease. I caught the disease for LPs. By 1994, I had completed all my Zeppelin and Floyd.
Zeppelin and Floyd.
I had all the early traffic, but their later stuff just made me annoyed.
Made me annoyed.
You realize that the radio just scratches at the top of the dirt.
Top of the dirt.
When $4 can buy you Crown of Creation with a lyric insert. So I had a lot of LPs. My friends were mostly clueless. It was just me in an ocean of cheap vinyl like a black sea. I hardly had an income, but it was easy. An awesome world awaited with a cheap key. And sometimes in the garbage they were just free. And that's the way I caught the disease. I caught the disease for LPs. And then the 90s ended and I wasn't no teenager no more.
Teenager no more.
But I started getting shakes if I was passing any used record store.
Used record store.
I got the finger muscles you develop when you flip through a stack. Crate digging for the cheap and obscure, and there was no turning back. A total junkie for the LPs, and nothing in the world was gonna help me. See me quit no sooner than see hell freeze. And there was nothing like the thrill of getting lucky. I'd climb 5 feet to the breeze, 'cause the world was still awash in LPs. And I still had the disease for LPs. Nowadays that stuff is so expensive I don't bother to try. Everything's reissued and plus everything is priced really high. The field is overcrowded, it's impossible to get a good fix. So I walk right past the records and I flip through all the used compact discs. Yeah, nowadays it's mostly CDs. No one wants to keep them, so there's plenty. Folk and punk and private press and rap and indie. Bonus tracks and liner notes are just empty. As long as I can still make a good discovery, I've still got that music hunger disease. That disease that I got from LPs. When they were dirt cheap in the 1990s. Whatever people don't want, that's the time to get it. Take a chance on something, it might blow your mind. And if it's cheap, there's less chance you'll regret it. Though I'm drowning in my stacks because of all the stupid albums I used to try. Nowadays, looking back, I just regret the ones I didn't buy.
And we're back. And that was, yet again, I played that song by Jeffrey Lewis, LPs. Everyone should go watch that video. It's my favorite video. It's Jeffrey Lewis, and it's exactly how I feel. Anyway, Ricky Frankel's back in the saddle again. Ricky, what's happening?
John, it is so nice to be talking to a fellow published author on the Punk News podcast.
Indeed. Ricky, you and I are a rare fine club indeed. Indeed.
Yes, we are. And I'm sorry, I had to just put that in everyone's face just for this episode. But no, it's great to be back. I'm really happy. I'm stoked to be here, and I'm stoked to be talking about this whole Record Store Day Black Friday situation.
I would tell people to go buy Ricky's book, I'm Out of Here, but it's sold out, so you can't get it.
It finally sold out. It was so funny, like, the way I did it, I only had, like, 150, and it was, like, the last three had to, like, go, and those took the slowest. But thank you to everyone who bought it, who listened to the Punk Dudes podcast, too. But it's done. So, yeah, but also, if you haven't yet, buy John's book. I read it in 2 days. It's that good.
Thank you, Ricky. Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that. Architects of Self-Destruction, Out Be a Rare Bird Lit. You can get it there and Amazon and your local books. Go to your local bookstore first and get it there. If not, if you see me walking down the street, I'll sell you one. I'll even sign it for you. So anyways, listen, every Record Store Day, Ricky and myself and sometimes Sam meet up and we talk about our cool Record Store Day scores from Record Store Day. And, of course, this past Friday was Record Store Day Black Friday, except twist. I didn't go to Record Store Day this year, and I think neither did Richard. Richard, you go to Record Store Day this year?
No, and typically I don't go on Black Friday Record Store Day. It just there's usually not a big thing a lot there that I want, and I can usually get it online for about the same price anyway, except for like one from back in the day. But like there was nothing on this list I wanted, and it just wasn't worth getting in line for anything.
Well, two things to unpack there. First of all, I'm interested that you make the distinction between Record Store Day proper and Record Store Day Black Friday, because to me it's like it's the same exact event. So do you make a distinction between the two, or go ahead.
Yeah, I do, because Black Friday is kind of like this, at least here in the U.S. It's like a big like shopping corporate-y event where people get their stuff on for like Christmas and the holidays and stuff, while like Record Store Day Black Friday Record Store Day proper is like this kind of more it's really aimed at the they're both aimed at the independent record stores, but regular Record Store Day I think is more so like there's not that like overhanging cloud of you need to go buy stuff for the holidays and just buy more stuff on Black Friday generally. And also like consistently the lists are always better on Record Store Day proper, because I mean, I don't think I've ever stood in line for Record Store Day Black Friday ever.
See, to me, there's no difference. I mean, I don't really do Black Friday like shopping sales, but I definitely do Record Store Day Black Friday, because to me it's the exact same event, just with a slightly different name. At any rate, I didn't go this year, Ricky, just because the heat wasn't there. The heat wasn't in the kitchen. The snap wasn't in the air. You know what I mean?
Especially this year's list. And then on top of that, you had all of these delays too. So it was like, I don't know why I'm going. Why I would go.
This year, I was only mildly interested in the Joe Strummer 12-inch and the Weird Al 12-inch. The Joe Strummer 12-inch, it's like they are so scraping the bottom of the barrel with Joe's. Like, there actually is a lot of cool Joe Strummer stuff they could release. Namely, there's a bunch of really cool bootlegs that sound really good of Joe Strummer live, which they could release. But instead, they released a 12-inch single with two tracks from the second album, Global A-Go-Go. It was like, why? The Weird Al thing was kind of cool. It's Weird Al doing two Ramones tracks, well, three songs, two tracks, Beat on a Brat, and then I think I Want to Be Sedated Live, which was cool. But it's like, well, like I had something else going on, so it was like, you know what, if I don't, I don't. But actually now it's like super cheap on Discogs anyway, as is the Joe Strummer, so
yeah. And I remember on regular Record Store Day, they've been doing this weird like little like novelty thing of 3-inch records, and I definitely wanted the Weird Al one that came out this past the regular Record Store Day, and couldn't find it anywhere. I don't know what the deal is.
You can get the 12-inch version now. If you ask me, like the 3-inch version thing is, it is a novelty, but to me it's like, well, like you're making a record even less playable. I don't really get the point of it. I'd rather have a 7-inch,
Definitely. I think for me it's just like I want, if it's gonna be Weird Al like on vinyl, a 3-inch is actually kind of in a way is sort of fitting. And also like I just wanted to be able to have like a 3-inch just in my collection. So I tried going after that, but nothing. Even at Amoeba they weren't carrying it this year. So I'm happy. It's not like I needed to get that. I think I got everything I wanted. I definitely got everything I wanted on Record Store Day. So, but this list this year, Black Friday, weak.
So the listeners do know we're going to bitch a lot for the next 10 minutes and then we're going to get it paused. But it was weak this year. What can I say? Go ahead, Ricky.
Yeah. So the one thing that I was kind of interested in was I think they put out something in Europe this past Record Store Day only. But there's this band that I don't know that well. Maybe, John, you know. But The Freeze, they had their second album, Rabid Reaction, come out.
The American band, The Freeze? Because there's actually been like a couple of The Freezes.
Yeah, Rabid Reaction by The Freeze was on the list, and then it's one of these. So I'm like, it was one of those things where I'm like, if I see it in a store later on, and it's like the Record Store Day version, like, okay, I'll get it. But am I standing in line for it? No. And then it was on the list.
You can get an original for $20, man, if you want.
I know, but it's like I have a running list of stuff where like I want it, but I don't want to pay shipping for it. So you're right. Like, you know what another one of those is for me is like an OG copy of the self-titled Blondie album. Like if I can get one of those.
Oh, yeah. You'll come across that.
Store, I would love that. I let it go. I was stupid for letting it go. But anyway, so this Freeze one, it sounded good when I listened to it like on YouTube. But now it's one of the delayed releases that won't be out till the 10th. So I'm thinking about just letting it go. I don't need it for my collection. I just thought it was something interesting. But other than that, there was nothing on this list at all.
Yeah. Hey, did you know that the first press of the first Blondie record wasn't on Chrysalis? It's on something called Private Stock.
Oh, weird. I didn't know that.
That's kind of cool. Anyways, so the question is, Ricky, do we blame Record Store Day for squeezing the golden goose too much? Or are they just doing what they got to do in the face of COVID? Because remember, this year there was 3 Record Store Days, last year there was 4, but the year before that there was 2. So do we blame Record Store Day for poor planning and squeezing the golden goose too much? Or is this just the result of COVID and what everybody's got to deal with?
Well, I don't know if you saw my comment on the announcement that there were going to be some delayed releases for this Black Friday Record Store Day. I said something along the lines of like, Record Store Day has always been one of the main culprits in like pressing plant delays, and now it's just the ultimate irony that there are Record Store Day pressing delays, you know? So
yeah.
I mean, so I don't know. I think last time I was on, you know, we all talked about stuff that we want to be done on Record Store Day for the occasion, but like they're doing stuff that is, they're trying to get to a more like general audience. And I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if I can't even tell if the lists are getting longer now because they're trying to just pander and trying to just cast as wide a net as they possibly can for different people who like different music. But like, I don't know. I think how many like movie soundtracks need to be put on vinyl, you know? I don't know what they're doing. And also the other thing that I've noticed, especially the last few years, is like there is no like big ticket item really anymore. Like, remember the Cake box set? That was like the big thing. Or like the Brand New box set, I think that was a few years ago. That's not happening anymore. And also, one other thing is I've noticed this, the quality, I don't know if it's just Record Store Day stuff, but the quality of stuff I've been noticing has been kind of tilting downward a little bit. Like,
you mean the pressing quality or the items selected to be,
Well, both. I mean, I don't think I had listened to the Rage Against the Machine live record when I was on earlier this year that I got. It was basically CD quality. It was a double LP, which is not cheap, and it wasn't a gatefold. So, like, I don't know, like, if this is supposed to be, like, a special thing, like, make it a special thing and make it quality. And I think that there were also claims online that, like, one of the songs were, like, censored, which it kind of sounded like it. I don't know. Maybe it was just the mic that was used to record, but... like there have been some dodgy things, not 100%, but like I've just been kind of noticing things have not been super, not as legit as they used to be. And it's sad because especially, you know, when we were going hard, like in 2015, 2016, those were great years. And 2017 were great years for Record Store Day.
I generally agree with you. I think with regards to pressing quality, is a lot of those records are pressed in Europe, the Czech Republic and other places. And in my opinion, other people feel like a lot of stuff pressed in the Czech Republic just doesn't sound good. It's like it's a super heavy vinyl, it's a super thick jacket, but the record itself doesn't sound that good, you know, whereas the American pressing plants, I think, sound better, frankly, just because they're better. They either they got different equipment or they're better with it or any number of reasons. You know, I guess it's, you know, why is one baker better than another? I guess I don't know if it's a science or an art, frankly. I think it's kind of an art. I would say in one respect, I guess they're running out of things to reissue in that, like, you're right that it is a mass appeal thing. But I don't mind that because the idea is to get people in the record. So, you know, let's make something more. And honestly, frankly, it's worked. I mean, the kids want Adele, the kid on vinyl. The kids want Taylor Swift on vinyl. And so it worked, which is good, I think. You know, there are delays, but that'll get sorted out eventually. You know, I do think that the massive popularity of vinyl, though, is like any other massive like explosion of popularity. Something else is that it'll shoot way up, which it is right now, and then it'll crash and kind of dwindle back down to, you know, 1/10 or 1/20th of what it used to be, which I think is going to happen, frankly. But I think the other thing is, though, there is a lot of really cool stuff they could reissue. And they're just kind of being lazy, I think. Like, they put out 2 Dio picture discs of albums that were just recently reissued. Nobody wants picture discs. They suck, you know?
Yeah, I think while they're trying to do, like, the more mainstream stuff, like the Taylor Swift or the Billie Eilish 7 Inches or whatever, like, I don't know if they're really paying attention to, like, the indie stuff that that you and I love, like the independent label stuff. Like, remember last... on the last podcast I was on, I said, like, we need Morning Glory's early stuff on vinyl. That hasn't happened.
Yeah, well, you know?
Would be a good Record Store Day thing. A limited one, it doesn't have to be 1,000 copies, but I'm just saying, like, that's just an example of, like, an indie thing that they're just, I don't know if they're paying attention to or not.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I know Jello submitted one of his 7 inches to be a Record Day thing, and they rejected it, which that seems kind of dumb. Like if it's Jello, like, even if they're not gonna like Jello's got cred, you know what I mean? And people are a fan of Jello. Like, you know, Jello is not, you know, this is not a pair. Well, this is not a pair. I like pairs. Pairs are cool, and they're popular with the kids, but they're not generationally popular like Jello is. You know what I mean?
So to turn
down Jello seems kind of dumb, really. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, to Jello's credit, is that the jazz one you were talking about?
The jazz one?
The jazz band one where there was a 7-inch that came out along with that record.
That might have been the one that they turned down.
Yeah, so, I mean, to Jello's credit, though, he actually, like, recovered and said and put, like, a little label on that 7-inch because I have it somewhere. And it says rejected by Record Store Day, so he handled it perfectly.
That's it. So, but also, like... there's a lot of cool stuff that they could reissue like another Billy Joel record. Like, they could put out, like, there's lots of Billy Joel live recordings they could put out that I'm sure they own. I'll tell you, it is weird, like, not to get off, like Alice Cooper's been putting out a lot of really cool live stuff through Record Store Day, and Sublime has too. So some bands are kind of on top of it, but some are just, like, lazy, you know, like Fleetwood Mac. Like, they put out another Fleetwood Mac reissue that no one cares. Well, actually, people didn't want it just because it's Fleetwood Mac, but it's a lazy reissue that I think is going to, you know, kind of burn everyone out in the long run, you know.
And also, you know, if you're doing a reissue, whether it's Record Store Day or not, like, put a little bit more time into it. 2 great examples of vinyl reissues that I can think of off the top of my head is Fat Records' Fuck World Trade reissue. I thought they did a phenomenal job with that. They added, you know, Choking Victim songs, extra, and a big gatefold, really nice splatter vinyl. And then, what's the other one? Teenage Bottle Rocket did one. Hang on a second. Teenage Bottle Rocket. Sorry, hang on 1 second. They did Red Scare put one out. Oh, Warning Device. That came out a couple years ago on Record Store Day. And they put an extra track on it. Lovely, translucent yellow with black splatter. That's the way to do it. Put in the effort. And so there's that. Because I'm not going to just buy the album again. Unless it's very rare circumstances. But, put a little... Yeah, labels and bands should put a little something extra, whether it's just the physical part. It doesn't have to be another track. But also, I would love to see what, the list that got of Record Store Day releases that got rejected. Right? Who knows what, didn't get put out these last few years?
Well, I will say, Ricky, Counterattack, and maybe your experience has been different, and then we'll get to the main part of today's episode.
Yeah.
But when I'm standing in line, I'm not standing in line with other people like me. I'm standing in line. A lot of people want Foo Fighters. A lot of people want Grateful Dead. Or they want, the Bruce Springsteen reissue of Asbury Park. Or, it seems like people want the reissue of the record that you can buy used right now for $6.99. You know what I mean? Is that your experience, or is it different than an Amoeba? Because, I mean, the record store I go to is more of a, quote, dad record store or a college kid record store, where you go to Amoeba. Which I just visited for the first time, which ruled.
Oh, you went?
It was awesome. Oh, it was awesome. Good. Amoeba ruled, good. Man.
Yeah. The new place is awesome, isn't it? It's really, they did a great job.
They did. The reason it's one of the most famous record stores, because it's one of the best. It really is.
Yeah.
So when you're standing in line at Amoeba, what do those people want?
No, I agree. I think Amoeba has such a huge selection, and even the record stores out here, generally. You do see more people that want those reissues just so they can have it in their the album in their collection. I think I don't think they're as picky and aiming for a specific thing in their collection like you and I are. But at the same time, that leaves less room for the independent stuff that you and I want. Or the less mainstream stuff that you and I want, So I've been noticing the labels that I really like too have not been doing Record Store Day that much. I mean, I know Fat did a NoFX 1 7-inch a few years ago, but they haven't really been doing anything for Record Store Day since. And I know Red Scare will do it every once in a while. It's pretty rare. And also, generally I don't get a lot of stuff on Record Store Day. It's usually a few things. It's not like I go there and just, get the whole list like a lot of people do.
It's difficult to get a gauge of record label and record store actual view on Record Store Day, because yeah. Record Store Day actually is kind of a powerful entity, and people are scared of like angering them, frankly, or at least that's the vibe I get from asking random people that sort of are in the know. And I do know that a lot of small record labels are really put off by Record Store Day because it's a real pain to get in there and you don't really get any money out of it. So what's the point, but along those lines, I had a great segue that I love. Ricky said that something you said before that you don't get a lot at Record Store Day. At any rate, for me and Ricky and Rick, or Ricky and I rather, every day is Record Store Day because Ricky, true, you and I hit up the record store. I don't know how many times per month you go to the record store, Ricky.
Oh boy, I probably go. See, I know this sounds completely counterintuitive, but I actually have moved closer to Amoeba, and I'm only 15 minutes away. So I try not to go too much because I don't want it to lose its luster. So I think I've been there 3 or 4 times since the reopening. There's some other record stores that I'll mention today too. So maybe I'll go. Between 10 to 15 times a year. I think it's probably on the lower end of that this year because I've been, getting stuff through mail order, all the new stuff that came out. So I try and do more online just because of the new stuff and the limited variants, but that are out there. So, but every once in a while, I'll peruse and I'll see stuff that, Amoeba will put up on Instagram and I'll drive down there in the middle of the day to get it before it goes. So, what about you? How many times are you at a record store?
I go about once a week. Yeah. So listen, man, I love going to record stores. So today, Ricky and I are just going to do 5 records each that we have gotten at the record store over the past year. Not necessarily quote record store day stuff, just cool stuff at the record store. And we're going to get some record stores some shout outs. And that's what we're going to do. So let's play 2 songs. Ricky, what's the song you're going to play? And then I'm going to play a song after you. So what are we kicking off with, Ricky?
All right, so the first song I'm going to play is off a record that I found, and this is just it was a gem of a grail of mine for a while to find in store, and that is the Dead Kennedys' Frankenchrist. And so here is Goons of Hazzard by the Dead Kennedys.
And then after Ricky does that, I'm going to do something that isn't actually on one of my things, but we'll get into that in a minute. So I'm going to do Gwar's Cracking the Egg into Gorgor, or maybe just one of the songs. I don't know. We'll see. One of the songs from Gwar's Maximus Be Destroyed. Let's go.
America's best loved goods. Here comes the four-wheel drive for static through his hands. Got your good racks, tractor ties, and drivers. We couldn't find a chick to sit in the middle, so we tricked ourselves, sticking out the windows and the giants instead. We are the Goons of Hazzard. We're a fire on the UTVs. We run down bikes and six hikers, cause we don't care. Anti-heroes of the tough guy flicks, flashing punks and bums and bags with a baseball bats. No gear to blow away in the woods today, so we go to Oregon, shoot a black kid down, a waste demonstrators and things for us. We are the Goons of Hazzard. For a fight on your TV, we leave you in our pool of blood, cause we don't care. Cause we don't care.
And we're back. Ricky, Dead yes. Kennedys' Frankenchrist album. One of the more divisive albums in the Dead Kennedys catalog. It's the slowest. I think it's the longest. And it's got the fewest songs by far. Yet, to you, it is a very special record. And from a legal standpoint, it's a special record. What's the deal with what's the deal with Frankenchrist, Ricky?
So, I always have seen reissues of this, and I'm like, no, I'm not buying a reissue of this. This is, let me tell the story, and then I'll say why I got it. So, every like 2 months, I'll see some friends down in Orange County, which is, I only go down there that often because it's a really pain in the ass to get down there. But there's this amazing, amazing record store that actually doesn't participate in Record Store Day at all. It's called Radiation Records. 80% punk rock, 10% new wave, 10% metal. And like, that's it. It's small, but it's cramped. There's so much stuff there, guys. So
Ricky, I got a package from Radiation Records today, and I was there about 2 months ago.
How'd you like it?
I liked it. They got a million cool – if it's your local record store – it rules. If you're visiting, if you want the latest punk stuff, they've got a lot of classic stuff too. But if you're visiting, it's cool. But I would say for their top end stuff, the prices are comparable to Discogs. So I didn't feel compelled to buy anything off the wall necessarily because I could get it on Discogs anytime I want. But they got a lot of cool stuff, and I definitely recommend checking them out. And their online mail order stuff is real cool too. You can get a lot of cool stuff there.
Yeah, so what they do there is there are on the desk kind of near the cash register, there are like three small crates, and it's all the really nice stuff that is obviously not on the walls. And every time I'm there, I just look through because I have found some amazing, amazing stuff in there. I found a very first orange cover press of Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables. And I just said, I have to have this. And it was still in the shrink wrap. It was not, it was open, but still like, it was amazing. So I found, the Dead Kennedys Frankenchrist. And I said, I even asked the guy, I'm like, is this what I think it is? This is it, isn't it? And he goes, yeah, it is. And I opened it and it had the very controversial poster, pristine condition. And the record was whoever owned it first had it in a like a protective plastic sleeve. I mean, this thing, and it just the cover was amazing. You can, it was perfect. And I go, I don't even need to look anymore. This is it. So because I got it more, I agree it's a controversial record for the Dead Kennedys because of all the reasons you said, John. But it's also because that's when that whole Tripper Gore thing was going on. And that's when she attacked Jello, like full court press, you know, that whole Oprah interview and all that stuff. And I just said, this is not just an amazing, one of my favorite punk rock bands of all time with my favorite guitarist of all time. This is a piece of music history. And I said, I'm taking this. So I walked out of there with just Frankenchrist and probably a decent price. It definitely wasn't a bargain, but I just said, I'm doing this. And one of many amazing finds at Radiation.
Frankly, Ricky, no matter how much you paid for it, you probably got a deal because even within the past 6 months, record prices have shot through the roof. It is crazy what records are going for right now. I mean, I was in the record store yesterday. They had a Cyndi Lauper record for $20. A year ago, you could get Cyndi Lauper for a dollar anywhere. Now it's $20 for Cyndi Lauper. Yeah. It's crazy. So, go ahead.
Yeah, so if you're ever at Radiation, look through those like three little crates. They're not – I mean, they're more like boxes. But, I mean, there's one thing there in there that I recall that's like almost there every time. But they have an original Out of Step 12-inch by Minor Threat for like – it's the original. I think they want like, it's like $500 or something like that. I didn't get it, but like, that's the kind of stuff you get there. They know their stuff. They get really, really good collectible stuff in there. So that's my first one that I'll share with everyone. That was a big find for me this year. Probably the biggest.
Well, that's cool. If the listeners don't know, they should definitely check out the story behind the Frank and Christ album. That's absolutely the album where Jello was put on trial for obscenity and he beat the rap, but it essentially destroyed the Dead Kennedys and cost him a lot of money. And Jello talks about it on his spoken word record, Harmful Matter. What's it called? Tales from the Trial. Damn, what's that album called? Tales from the Trial. Damn. High Tales from the... Oh, crap. Crap. it is called... High Priest of Harmful Matter, Tales from the Trial. That's what it's called. Check that out. Honestly, you're probably not going to listen to it more than once, because once you've heard it, you've heard it. But it's real cool. Ricky, my choice will be a really odd thing. I recently procured Gwar's demo tape. Not their original demo tape, but the demo tape between the second album, which is Scum Dogs of the Universe, and the third album called America Must Be Destroyed, which most people don't even know exists. I didn't really know it existed until I acquired it. And basically what it is, it's four tracks from America Must Be Destroyed before they recorded America Must Be Destroyed. Self-recorded, except for they record – I don't know what studio they recorded it in, but it's not like a basement recording. It's a studio recording acting as a demo to send out to producers and possibly record labels to get a deal. And people might say, well, weren't they already on Metal Blade at that time? The answer is no, because most people think Scum Dogs, the second album, was on Metal Blade, but it was technically only licensed to Metal Blade because originally the original label that was going to put out Scum Dogs, who gave Gwar lots of money, went bankrupt. And therefore, Gwar was released from the contract with the money and the recording of Scum Dogs of the Universe. So the original press of Scum Dogs of the Universe is on their own master label. Later that year, it was licensed to Metal Blade, but Gwar owned that. So they didn't really have a record label at the time. So they recorded a new demo with four tracks from America Must Be Destroyed, Crack in the Egg, Gore Gore, Have You Seen Me, and... I'll tell you in a second what the other song is. It's one of the ones on the B side. And so I was thrilled to get this, and I was surprised at how great the sound quality. Like, the sound quality is really, really good. What's cool is a lot of the lyrics are different. A lot of the instrumental parts are different, and it's. I mean, honestly, like, I've heard every Gwar thing there is. It's such a thrill to kind of get that rush of new Gwar, which, you know, once you've collected almost everything a band has, you're never going to get that again, and it's kind of sad. Poor Old Tom was the other track on it. And so I got it. It sounds real good. And Ricky, who do you think I procured the demo tape from?
Well, yeah, I mean, I how did you get it?
Well, it was posted on Discogs, and I bought it probably within 30 seconds of it being posted on Discogs. And it said, I got it from Steve Albini.
What?
It was on Discogs, and I bought it, and it said Electrical Studios. I'm like, Electrical Studios? I'm like, is that Steve Albini? I'm like, no, he's Electrical Audio. But it was Steve Albini. It wasn't. It was actually like his right-hand man, but it was Steve Albini's tape. And I was like... So was Gwar trying to record with Steve Albini? And the official Steve Albini response was, Steve can't remember if Gwar was trying to record with him or not. He was friends with one of the guys or one of the friends of the guys in Gwar, and that's why he has the tape. It's possible that Gwar was considering recording with him in 1991 and 1992, but he can't quite remember. But that's how he came in contact with a Gwar demo tape. And now I have the demo tape that Gwar gave to Steve Albini in my possession.
Amazing. That's pretty, pretty cool.
You won't get that at Record Store Day, people.
No. That's damn, dude. Like,
pretty wild, Ricky.
Is wild. Yeah, that's amazing.
So, Ricky, what's your next pick?
Okay, so just to be clear, my list for this podcast is stuff that I got in store. I've done plenty of stuff on Discogs this year too. So that's just a little asterisk for me. My next one, I'll make it, because we talked about Amoeba, I got the Emil and the Sniffers self-titled there. It was just, I went there and just kind of looking around, and, they got a bunch of stuff that I was kind of wanting. This is just it was a brand new second pressing, on gold vinyl. And it's funny. I mean, I heard the singles from Comfort to Me, and I'm like, whoa, what is this? What is this band? Because I'd never heard of them. And I love Comfort to Me. Like, that is such an awesome album. So I'm like, I'm not even going to listen to this self-titled first. Like, it's it's worth just getting it without even listening to it. So that's what I did. It's really good. And I wish I could have found this album first before Comfort to Me, because I still have my punk news reviewer, like, reptilian brain, where I'm like, what would I have thought about this if I had heard this first? And to me, it's like, you listen to it, it's good. And then, like, it's, you can tell the band is, it's good, but you can tell the band is onto something and they have a lot of potential, but they're not there just yet. It's still really good. And then Comfort to Me comes out and you're like, whoa, this is really, really good. This band rocks. So, so I got this record. Really happy with it. Sounds great. And, it was nice to be, you know, I'm always grateful to be back inside of Amoeba. So, So I'm one of the few people getting the more obscure stuff when I'm there.
Wait, so you thought Comfort to Me was better than the first album?
I do. I think especially, like, there are some tracks on Comfort to Me are just they're just bangers, man. Like, they, like, Hurts. I know it's like the lead single, but God damn, that is a catchy song, and it just has everything that the band is about in one track on that record. Guided by Angels, also awesome. And I think Comfort to Me kind of flows a little bit more, a little bit better. But that's not discounting how great the self-titled is. I mean, Security. I have no issue just playing this album, Comfort to Me, all the way through. And the same goes for the self-titled. I think Comfort to Me is definitely a step up.
Do you
think
they're
the opposite?
Yeah, I do think. I like Comfort to Me, and each time I listen to it, I like it more. I love the first. I thought the first album was so good. The first three times I listened to it, I didn't love it. I liked it. I loved the singles and EPs from before that, particularly Some Mutts Can't Be Muzzled, the 7-inch. Then I heard the album, and I liked it, and I listened to it, like, a third time. And I'm like, wow. Like, I thought it was it's almost hardcore, and I thought it was, like, hardcore punk, that is. And I thought it was absolutely fantastic, raw, savage, fast, catchy. I really dug it. I felt Comfort to Me, it felt like they were, quote, trying to be mature. And I feel like the whole release, like, Amy and even the band are, like, kind of on a leash that like, we're constantly starting to build up energy, but we never go over the top. We stay right at 8. We never go totally crazy. Where the first album, I thought they did kind of go crazy and exploded. But everyone loves Comfort to Me. I like it. I just don't I like it a lot. I just don't love it yet. Go ahead.
Oh, see, that's interesting because, like, again, if I had the context of hearing the first one, the self-titled first, I think I may agree with you, but I think out of the in the context that I have, I heard Comfort to Me first. And you might be right. I need to listen to the self-titled a few more times. I've only listened to it like 2 or 3 times since I've gotten it a couple months ago. So you could be right, but I think Comfort to Me is, I think it's also pretty, you know, it's a little bit shinier in terms of the production as well.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I mean, I don't think they it's definitely not overproduced, but you can definitely hear the difference.
Well, there you have it. What's next pick?
Oh yeah.
Will be let's see here. Queen. So listen, this is why you should go to the record store, people. I love going to the record store. Like I said, I go a lot. I was there just yesterday, and while I was there, I the cool thing about, first of all, the record store rule, because if you just buy stuff online, you're only ever going to buy stuff that you know you want or you know is out there and you know is cool. You know, the cool thing about going to the record store is you go there and there's stuff you didn't know existed, you didn't know about, you never heard of, or you just never thought to think about. I got the Queen, I Want to Break Free 12-inch single. And as the listeners surely know, I love 12-inch singles because they sound amazing. And also they have unreleased tracks on them and stuff like that. Queen's 80s period was hit or miss, for sure, say lightly. There was some good stuff in there, but after the game, Queen's big thing in the 70s, we don't use synthesizers, we don't use synthesizers. And then all of a sudden they're like, now we're only going to use synthesizers for some reason. And a lot of Queen's 80s stuff is kind of just bad 80s music. But some of it is really good. The cool thing about 12-inch singles is that, especially in Queen's case, is when you like the song "I Want to Break Free," it's pretty good, but it's not great. When you put it on the album, it kind of gets lost in the wash of all these okay songs.
Yeah.
But when you kind of pull it out of its context and just listen to it as itself, you're like, actually, this is pretty good without the other junk hanging around. You're like, actually, this song is like really cool. And what's neat about Queen's 12-inch singles and a lot of bands with 12-inch singles is the version of the 12-inch single is different than the album version. Cure is famous for that. So is the Smiths. So is, I'm trying to think of other people with cool 12-inch singles. Dead Kennedys singles are actually different than the album version.
Yes.
Which is cool.
Yes. Singles. I was just going to say, I have the Dead Kennedys Holiday in Cambodia 12-inch, as well as Bleed for Me. And they sound great.
What I was just thinking of. Even some of the Ramones 12-inch singles are different, which is kind of cool. And I'm going to talk about that in a second, too. But the nice thing, a lot of the 12-inch single remixes or 12-inch single versions in the 80s for rock bands are so bad. Because I think they kind of borrowed the idea from Jamaican music, but I'm not sure. In Jamaican music, there's what's called a disco mix. That's where you take the normal version of the song, and then you put a dub version or a DJ version on the second half, and you kind of mash them together. So instead of a 3.5-minute song, it's a 7-minute song, where basically the first 3.5 minutes is the normal song, and the next 3.5 minutes kind of just rides the groove. And that's the way to do it. For some weird reason, in North America and Europe, The 12-inch dance singles for stuff like You Spin Me Right Round Like a Record, or maybe even like Human League, like they extend the intro so long and it's like boring and stupid and they put in all these stupid sound effects and the song doesn't start for 4 minutes. No, that's the wrong way to do it. You put the song in the front and then you extend the groove in the back because people are now jumping, you know. Queen did this as well for I Want to Break Free, and that the extended version is the back half is extended, which really makes the song really cool. And also the flip side, Queen has a lot of really cool B-sides that you can't get on the albums, and Queen has basically done two large sets of reissues. They reissued their albums in 1991 and again in about 2005, I think it was, and they did double discs. The weird thing is on both those reissues is they left off a lot of B-sides, which if you're going to do a deluxe reissue, just include all the B-sides. It's dumb not to. I don't know why they made that decision. The 2005 reissues are particularly odd because they left off some of the bonus tracks from the old from the 1991 reissues and added other ones and some that like aren't even relevant. They're like live songs from like 5 years later, which is weird. And so on the flip side of the 12-inch single I Want to Break Free is a song called Machines or Back to Humans. And it's the extended 12-inch version. And it basically is Queen doing a Kraftwerk song or Queen doing a Neil Young Trans song off the album Trans. And it's a really cool, sounds great B-side that you can only get on this 12-inch single. Ricky, how much do you think I paid for this?
Is it original?
It's an original 12-inch single.
Oh. $10? $12?
$20. I overpaid. on the podcast, we often go about, oh, I got this great deal. You know, I paid $3 for a $30 record, or I paid $3 for 20, you know, but you know, you don't, I mean, I knew that I was paying a Queen 12-inch single at the record fair, $8 to $12, you know, mm-hmm. I knew I was overpaying, but it was there. I wanted it. It's, you know, sometimes you just got to do the public service. You know what I'm saying, Ricky? It's like,
yeah,
I can order on Discogs and wait, or it's right here. I can get it, and I can be listening to it in a half hour. I overpaid, and I'm not sorry I did.
Yeah, and back to my point about like having a list of stuff that I won't pay shipping for. Is that one of those things that like you didn't have that like on your Discogs list waiting for it to drop, right?
No, honestly, if I bought every single thing I want off Discogs, I would be broken one day.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, so I think – and also the other thing about buying online, which I – you know, obviously it's great and I do it – and I do it probably more than being in a record store. But, like, there's also the thrill of the hunt in the record store that is just so much fun, especially when you find something that you really want, like this Queen 12-inch, you know? So – that's why I like going every once in a while, is because you never know what you're going to find, especially like when I go to Amoeba. Most of the time I'm not looking in the bins, I'm looking at the walls to see if there's like a gem up there. And I've seen some amazing stuff that I've gotten, stuff that I had to let go but still thought was really cool. But so like Yeah, I mean, so, but no, listen, that's a good find. I don't say it. I really didn't say it enough on the podcast, but I do like Queen. I think it's a, they're kind of a singles band in my opinion. Like,
well, I would disagree with you.
Oh, really?
I would say the album. I would say the albums from the seven, like Queen One, Queen Two, Night at the Opera, Sheer Heart Attack, The Game, News of the World. I would say total albums. But
oh, listen, okay.
Agree to disagree. Sure. Ricky, what's your next pick?
My next
and
pick.
Then we'll play a song after we do our this round of picks. We'll do songs after that.
Yeah. So like I said, I go down to Orange County about once every 2 months. This time though, this pick of mine though is not from Radiation in Fullerton. I went down to meet a friend in Huntington Beach, and I went to this little record shop called Vinyl Solution, and I'm like, and what I realized was, oh wait, I thought it was my first time there, but then I realized like I've actually been here. I went to a secret leftover crack show. They played inside the record store. And John, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Just want to make sure. And I'm like, oh, I remember this place. So yeah, I went in and I kind of like beforehand, I looked in, at their Instagram and they had some like gems in there that I'm like, ooh, this could be cool. So I'm looking around. I see some good stuff. It's a lot of punk, some like jazz. It's kind of all over the place. I see a well, on the Instagram, I see that they have a promo copy, original promo copy of London Calling by The Clash. And I'm just like, oof, that is, and I love getting promos of like old stuff. Like that is something I definitely look out for. And I'm walking around, but then I see like, oh, they have a UK yellow press of Road to Ruin by the Ramones. I'm like, that's pretty cool, but I have a Road to Ruin. It's not yellow, but I don't need it to be yellow. It's okay. So I don't really find anything. And then I asked the guy, I'm like, hey, I saw on your Instagram that you have this London Calling record. And he's like, yeah. And I go, and I look at it and I'm like, this thing, like, and he played it too, like on the stereo throughout the store, and I'm like, oof, I think I'm gonna do it. So I got it. I think it's just one. It's again one like old records, original pressings of old records for me. Like I love that kind of stuff, and so I got it. And it has what's cool about this one, just on the cover, is it has a gold stamped like promotional copy, not for sale. Like stamp on the back top, on like the top left corner. And then also, and this may be with early pressings generally of London Calling, but I believe Train in Vain is a secret track on there. It's not listed on the back as the last song. So that was a very cool find there. So yeah, more than stoked on that.
Was that a USA press or a UK press?
I believe U.S. because it says CBS records on there.
Very cool. The missing Train in Vain credit is actually discussed in The Clash's 1991 box set. Basically, I think it was Mickey Foote, or maybe it was Guy Stevens, had them record a song for like an MME Flexi, but through some screw up, it never made it on the NME, and he thought they were going to be really pissed at him, so they just put it on the album as a hidden bonus track to kind of cover their tails, if you will.
Well, still, it's very cool, and like, yeah. I was once gifted a long time ago, a brand new reissue, and it's on the back there, so that I guess that got sorted out later on. But this is a very cool, unexpected find in the record store that I just said, this is one of those times where I'm like, yeah, got to get it.
So, Rick, what kind of personality are you, Ricky? Did you keep your reissue and the OG, or did you get rid of the reissue and you kept the OG?
Sometimes I get rid of it. Right now I have both. I'm not sure. I'm kind of not sure what I'm going to do with the original. It's not asking for food and it's not really taking up a lot of room, so I might just keep it for now. It's kind of like if I need a credit at a record store, it's something I can trade in later. I think I'm not in any rush though.
You mean the reissue?
The reissue. I'm sorry. Yeah. Reissue. Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. Oh, go ahead.
No. So what's next on your list, John?
Well, I feel like I talk about Alice Cooper all the time, and I guess I do. I should probably talk about it a little bit less. But there's a lot of exciting Alice Cooper news over the past couple of years, Ricky. Yes. Alice Cooper's Killer is one of the most killer albums ever. It is an amazing, amazing album. Mm-hmm. Audiophile pressings have always been kind of around, at least since the 80s, at least, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I've never been too much of an audiophile because, like, it gets to a point where, like, everyone's seen these guys at the record store. Like, he's got 15 copies of Sgt. Pepper, and he's like, well, you know, the high-end horns you can really hear on this one, but on this one you can hear Ringo's snare a little bit better. The snare is more full. And it's like, are you even enjoying it at this point? Or are you just like scientifically comparing sounds? You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Like, yeah, you know? I mean, I'm not paying attention that closely every time I put on a record.
And you know, the difference between a $100 and a $200 record player, immense. The difference between a $200 and a $400 record player, kind of big. The difference between a $400 and an $800 record player, meh. The difference between an $800 and a $1,600 record player, yeah, you can kind of hear it. The difference between a $1,600 and a $3,200 record player, you really got to strain to hear the difference. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. so, like, it's diminishing returns. And also, like, even when you have a killer, like honestly, like, If what you listen to sounds like crap, it does sound like crap and it gets annoying. But if it sounds good enough, you know. But like, if you have a really awesome sounding record player and I mean stereo setup, after a while you just kind of adjust to it and it doesn't sound amazing anymore. It just sounds normal, you know. Mm-hmm. But that all that being said, I've really been getting into kind of like high fidelity records. Like I'm like, oh, this really does sound good. Like the Rolling Stones just reissued all their stuff on half speed vinyl from the original master tapes. And they do sound pretty good, but do they sound radically different than the other ones? No, they just sound a little bit better. So I recently got the 50th anniversary audiophile pressing of Alice Cooper's Killer. It does sound better than the other ones, I got to say. Here's the difference, actually. It doesn't sound like your listening enjoyment is the same between the normal record and the super high fidelity one, right? Like you're both like, wow, this sounds great. The difference with the audiophile one is you can hear things that you didn't hear before. Like there's little strings here or bells here or there's echo here that you didn't hear before. And it sounds cool, but it's cool. And you're like, wow, this record really does sound great. But so what? You know, at the end of the day, so what if I can hear the very quiet strings on Desperado, you know, the song Desperado by Alice Cooper? It's like,
right.
It doesn't make the song better. It just makes it slightly more, you know, higher fidelity. And so it's cool. I enjoy it. I'm glad I got it. But I'm still very much on the fence with regards to high fidelity. I've got some high fidelity Rolling Stones stuff. I've got high fidelity Men at Work. I've got high fidelity Alice Cooper. I've got high fidelity The Cars. I've got high fidelity. I mean, when I say high fidelity, I mean, what do you call those? Those MoFi audio stereo labs or whatever they're called. Yeah. And they all sound really, really, really good. But and I enjoy it. But it's like, do I want to spend $50 on that or do I want to get two records for $25? Or do I want to get 10 $5 records? You know what I mean? So
I think that's you do those if you like, if it's like a top, like,
yeah,
top record for you. But like to go out of your way and do it for every single one is crazy. By the way, I am pro Alice Cooper. I saw him in 2013. Last year I got an original press of the greatest hits from the original Columbia Record Club. So I've been looking at Killer for a while. It's been on my list, not at the top.
Oh, you gotta get Killer.
Yeah, I think so too.
Killer is an amazing, amazing record.
Yeah.
I actually mentioned this to Ricky. I'm going to go through some obscure Alice Cooper trivia for the listeners. First of all, Alice Cooper's greatest hits, the record, definitely worthwhile getting because the versions on the 12-inch vinyl version are the single versions, not the versions on the album. If you get the CD version, no, it's the album version on the CD, not the single version on the CD. Also, in the original one of Alice Cooper, a lot of the records came with really cool packaging things. For example, Killer. Killer came with a calendar. Most people ripped off the calendar, but there was a calendar in Killer. School's Out, the original pressings came with a pair of panties wrapped around the vinyl instead of a sleeve. which yeah. that goes for 80 or 100 bucks now. So, the school that record also folded out into a school desk, which was cool. Muscle of Love came in kind of like a dirty box, which was like a porno mag or a blow-up doll, which was cool. And and Billion Dollar Babies came with a gigantic money clip inside, which was kind of cool. Alan Cooper. So let's play some tracks. Ricky, what are you going to play?
Okay, so because, you know, Comfort to Me is getting a lot of attention this year, I thought, and since I got the self-titled Animal and the Sniffers record this year, I think I'm going to play a song off that. I'm going to play Punisher by Animal and the Sniffers.
And I will play, let's play some Alice Cooper. This is something off Killer, and we'll be right back. And we're back, Ricky. We got two each, and then we'll wrap up with another song. How about that, Ricky? What's your next pick?
So I went to, let's see, I'm trying to decide. Okay, so there's another really great record store out in Tarzana, California, called CD Trader. Lots of CDs, obviously. I think some cassettes. They also usually have a lot of good stuff on their walls as well. They, over the last few years, they've been improving their punk section quite a bit. There's also a lot of the promo copy stuff that I get there. For example, I got Leave Home by the Ramones with Carbon Not Glue on it. And that had a promo stamp on it, which is very cool. But this is different.
Not to interrupt, Ricky, if the listeners don't know, the original press of Leave Home had Carbon Not Glue on it, but then Carbona sent a cease and desist to the Ramones, so they cut that off. Would they put on Susie's a Headbanger, I think is what they replaced it with?
Yeah, I think in other pressings, I think they had different songs on there too, aside from Susie's a Headbanger.
So if the listeners don't know, there's actually two versions of Leave Home with different tracks.
Yeah, so this is like off-brand for me, but I'm like a casual B.B. King fan. I have a copy of like his greatest hits, like on my phone, and that I got on CD for a few bucks. And that stuff is, if you want to change a pace from what we've been talking about, like he is phenomenal. I regret not seeing him when I had the chance to, but the tickets were just too expensive at the time for me. And, but I've been kicking myself for that. And I mean, this guy, B.B. King, is not underrated. I mean, overrated at all. Like, this guy is he's absolutely phenomenal at guitar. His voice is
he's
awesome.
Not underrated. That guy is not underrated.
Yeah. And so, I know this is kind of like basic, but one of my favorite songs of his is The Thrill Is Gone. And I'd always been looking for the record just in store, not on Discogs. For that album. And so I went to CD Trader one day. I was looking through the blues section and I found it. I couldn't believe it. And it's an original pressing from 1969. The cover is, I mean, it's a 50-year-old record now. So, it's a 50-year-old record now. So it's I'd say the cover for that age is probably like VG+. But I found it and I cleaned it because it was dusty. And it sounded great. So I found completely an original copy of Completely Well by B.B. King at this place called CD Trader. And I just adore it. It's such a great record.
Ricky, you know what's funny? I literally got that record like 4 days ago.
The same kind?
I don't know about the pressing, but I got it at the $3 bin. It's pretty beat up, but it's Completely Well.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's real good. B.B. King's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, and his live, I have his live, I think at Folsom Prison too, is just like, the guy is just, I mean, in a way, like, in the same sense of like metal, it's like his music is so brutal, like, it's so brutally honest, and you can hear the feeling, and just, goddamn, he's so good.
Listen, if you don't like BB, something wrong with you. That's what I'm saying. let's see. Here's what else I've got. So this is a brand new record from Tank Crimes. F'd Up's Year of the Horse. Amazing, amazing record. Arguably their best thing yet. A Year of the Horse was a monumental swing by F'd Up. It's part of their Zodiac series. F'd Up is releasing a song. Like when they started this, literally like 15 years ago, people like thought it was like a joke. They said, we're going to release one 12-inch single for every sign of the Chinese Zodiac, which is 12 signs, right, Ricky? 12 signs of the Chinese Zodiac, 13?
I think so. I'm not up on this.
Chinese Zodiac signs. There are 12 Chinese Zodiac signs, which I guess I know it's based on astrology, but I didn't realize it was one per month. Anyways, there doesn't have to be 12 months, right? There could be any number of months, hypothetically speaking. Like, it's just 12. It used to be 10. It was 10 till Caesar changed it. So anyways, So where am I going with this? The point being, effed up 15 years ago, they said, we're going to release one song, one 12-inch single for every song of the Chinese Zodiac. And everyone thought it was a joke. Well, now they're up to like, what, 8 or 9 now? And Year of the Horse, except for Year of the Horse, it's the first one that's not a 12-inch single. It is a double album and no B-side. It's all Year of the Horse. And it comes with a libretto that's the entire crazy story about this horse. It's like a Hawkwindian type, interdimensional travel type thing. And it's one of effed up's most ambitious works yet, which is really saying something. The record is beautiful, but there's three versions. There's the CD version, there's the 12-inch version, which is two 12-inch records, and there's a 3-inch version, which is totally different than a 5-inch version, rather, 5-inch vinyl version, which is totally different than Ricky, you're playing the guitar?
No, my computer started playing for some reason. I don't know why. Sorry.
I thought Ricky was giving me musical accompaniment to my long winded spiel about effed up.
No.
So, anyways, there's a five inch version too, which is totally different than the 12-inch version, of course. So effed up keeps doing really interesting things, and you know, sometimes bands get boring. Effed up, I thought maybe was getting a little boring with David Come to Life and Glass Boys, but now they are really back in the golden age, and I'm really digging this. And it's a cool brand new record. Ricky, what's your last pick?
Oh, just on the fucked up thing. I kind of agree. Like, I came in, found them like when David Comes to Life, and it just that didn't really do much for me. You did recommend to me a long time ago the No Passer On 7-inch, which I have and still and love. I do need to check out this new Zodiac record though.
It's just massive. Because it is massive, Ricky.
Yeah,
massive.
So I think I'll check that out soon. My last one's kind of an interesting one. I went down to Fullerton earlier this year again, and I went to Radiation Records, and I was digging through those nice like the collectible crates, and I found something really good that I'll say in a minute. But then I turn around and I see this Rancid live album behind me, and I go, "What is this?" And it's called Rancid Live in a Drive, like as a parody on the Live in a Dive Fat Records series. And it's a bootleg, because I guess Rancid's never put out a live record, right?
They put out a bunch of live in maybe it was 2002. They put out about 70 live recordings from that tour. That was the tour where they would do a couple Operation Ivy songs.
Yeah.
And I got two of those. The sound quality on those were okay, but they never put out a physical live. I don't even know if they've ever put out a physical live song, actually. I don't think they have.
Yeah. So because of all of that, like, you know, I just saw this. I'm like, what is this? And I mean, who put this out? I forget the name of the like quote unquote record label that put this out. But
it wasn't like a pun on Fat Records or whatever.
Oh, it's like a fart. No, it's called. It says a Fart Records production. And I mean, the album cover is fantastic.
Dead Cat. As opposed to Hellcat. Dead Cat.
Dead Cat. Yeah. And okay. So I mean, they did. The label did a really good job with everything. So I guess this is a collection of what you're talking about. I could be wrong, but it's for simplicity, it is basically a bootleg. Great set list. It's a double LP. One is gray. The other one is pink. I think there's a different variant as well, but I found this in store and I said, I think I need to get this. And I mean, yeah, there's a handful of Operation Ivy songs on there. There's also a Lars and the Bastards song. And the sound is okay. I think it's good for what it is. I don't have a lot of bootlegs. I have like this, I think I have another one and that might be it. I don't know. I don't really have a lot to compare it to, especially for a live bootleg. But you know what? If you want to see it, it's on my at DesertBurst92 is my Instagram, and I post all of the stuff that I get on there, so it's on there. And I posted the set list on there too. But it's good stuff. It's from New York. Their New York show from August 2006. And yeah, I just found this at Radiation, along with something else that I got there in that I found in the those like fancy collectible bins. I found a first pressing of Fugazi's End Hits on gray vinyl, which I did. Which
I know they ever did colored vinyl for Discord.
Oh, they do every once in a while. Like the new the reissue of some of the Minor Threat stuff and Fugazi, like they're on blue and red. But this one from 1998 is gray. And what I didn't know is End Hits is actually a gatefold, and the newer pressings are not. So I got those two that day, but I thought I'd talk about the Rancid bootleg since it was not terribly I don't think it's that well known when it came out. So I thought this was very cool. John, what's your last one?
My final pick is this weird record. It's Ramones' I Want to Be Sedated, the 12-inch promo that was never made available for – I mean, it's not super rare. You can get it if you want to get it. But it was never made for stores. It was sent to radio stations and that kind of thing. Yeah. It's I Want to Be Sedated, but not from when I Want to Be Sedated was originally released, which was on – in 1978, right? I think – yeah, 1978. Yes, 1978. This record is from 1988, and the reason they re-released it is when the Ramones released Ramones Mania, they did a music video for I Want to Be Sedated. Ironically, is of course on the recording I Want to Be Sedated, it's Johnny, Joey, Marky, and Johnny, Joey, Dee Dee, and Tommy. But in the video for I Want to Be Sedated from 1988, it's Marky and not Tommy, you know, which I guess what are you going to do? He's not in the band anymore, but you got to film a video. What can you do? You know? And so this 12-inch was released to promote the Ramones Mania, not End of the Century. And so it's got a couple of weird versions on it. The A-side is I Want to Be Sedated, the updated Sedated Radio Mix, which is a remix version. The B-side is even weirder. It's got the song Indian Givers on it, and that's just the normal version from End of the Century. But the other side is the I Want to Be Sedated Ramones on 45 Mega Mix, which it's if the listeners don't know, for a while there was these things called Stars on 45, and they were like KTEL comps and other compilations. KTEL was like a budget like mail order record thing where basically a bunch of Muzak type studio musicians would record like 30 Beatles songs, but they would only do like half of the song, and they'd segue them all together in like a big melody. One of the highest selling ones is the Rolling Stones one. It's called Stones on 45, I think. And it's like all the Rolling Stones hits played just by some studio band segueing them together. I don't say like disco track, but sort of like a dance thing where it's like, you know, it's like up and peppy, and it's just like a giant melody, and they're famously kind of bland and blasé, and I don't want to say terrible, but weird, and they take all the danger out of presumably dangerous music. So a lot of punk bands actually kind of made fun of that. Of course, Captain Sensible did Damned on 45 on the 12-inch single for Happy Talk. Circle Jerks, of course, did Circle Jerks on 45 on the third album, A Golden Shower of Hits. And this Ramones, I Want to Be Sedated Ramones on 45 Mega Mix, is kind of the Ramones sort of making fun of that KTEL thing, even though it was already long since over by then. So it's kind of this weird, and as far as I know, that's never been issued on any CD comp or on any bonus track, and they really should have put that on one of the bonus tracks. And so to get it, you got to get the I Want to Be Sedated 12-inch single from 1988. Ricky and I'm jealous of this. Ricky also owns a Ramones song where you can only get it on the 12-inch single. You can't get it on the CD, which of course is on the flip side of Bonzo Goes to Pittsburgh, which is And Go Home, never on any Ramones CD.
Yeah, is that the cover?
It's a cover. It actually might be. It might be. I'm not sure, honestly.
You know what?
I'll look it up right now.
Well, I can look at my collection right now. Hang on a second.
Ricky is now resorting. Is now, ladies and gentlemen, listeners, Ricky is now going over to the collection to investigate this mystery. We wait with bated breath while Ricky resolves this issue. He pulls out his Bonzo Goes to Pittsburgh 12-inch single.
Okay.
It usually goes about $25.
This was actually one that I got on Discogs because I love – Bonzo Goes to Pittsburgh is my favorite Ramones song.
Song, Ricky.
Yeah, and oh, where is it? Are you kidding me? Here, wait.
Ricky now in danger of not being able to find Bounty Road Pittsburgh. Pressed by Beggar's Banquet in the UK.
Here it is. Got it. It is so Bonzo Goes to Pittsburgh is on the A side. Then there's Go Home Ann, which is, you're right, that was actually mixed by Lemmy, which I didn't know. And then Daytime Dilemma is the third track, and that's a Dangers of Love cover. So I got that confused.
Daytime Dilemma is written by Joey and Daniel Ray.
Oh, no way. Okay. So that makes sense.
Well, there you have it. Mystery solved. Factor.
There
mystery.
We go.
So listen, Ricky, Record Store Day 2022. Are you going or are you going to extend your protest and refuse to go yet again?
I don't want this to be, this really isn't a protest. It's like, is there anything worth going for? This year was,
isn't that all protest, Ricky? If you don't like either candidate, don't vote out of protest because no one was voting for it.
Fair, yeah. I mean, listen, not really. I mean, it's kind of, I've just noticed a pattern that Record Store Day, Black Friday is always lesser than the regular one. If there's something good, I'll go get it. But next year, I'm looking forward to it. There's usually always a few things that I want, just like this past year. So no, like I'm always interested in looking at the list, and usually there's one or two things that I will get in line for. So this is not a protest, an ongoing protest. It's just like a choose your battles kind of thing. So what about you? Are you? I assume you're going to get in line, aren't you?
If there's stuff for me to check out, I'm going. Actually, there was supposed to be an Alice Cooper thing came out, which was really just a repress of like Dragon Town or Brutal Planet. You know, one of his honestly not as good records that I was going to go get, but they pushed that back till 2022. So I will be there to pick that on up. And I dig Record Store Day. We have this discussion. It seemed that record stores liked Record Store Day, but once again, you know, kind of through the airways, I'm getting record stores aren't kind of hyped on Record Store Day as they had been in the past. But I don't know. I'd really like to get to the bottom of that, but everyone's kind of shy to talk because they don't want to get beat up by certain individuals. So who knows? Who knows? But yeah, Ricky, I guess we'll close this out by playing a song. But also, what are one or two records that you would like to see at Record Store Day? Not that like you would love, like, you know, I'd love for, you know, I don't know, a live record, you know, from Black Flag, from Keith Moore's Black Flag. It's not going to happen. What's a record that you would, or two, that you would like to see at Record Store Day that could conceivably be there? You see what I'm saying?
Oh, conceivably. So like not my Morning Glory, early Morning Glory stuff.
Actually, I would say Morning Glory might barely pass the muster because Morning Glory certainly is a band with a lot of fans. I mean, Leftover Crack, obviously, hypothetically, they wouldn't, but they hypothetically would be big enough to do something for Record Store Day, right? So if Leftover Crack would, then I think Morning Glory could just because there's such a link there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think The Whole World's Watching by – I'm going to stick with The Whole World's Watching by Morning Glory and the Suicide singles, but – you know, I was also one of my holy grails is the Indie K 7-inch. I would also love to see their full length Kill Whitey as a Record Store Day thing. I think that would be really cool. You know, I mean, I know that's kind of a stretch too, but like this is like those early 2000s records that were really good that did not get any vinyl attention. So that's what I would say. So what about you? I'm sure you have something good.
I guess I got two. I actually haven't really thought about this at all. Is Mick Jagger put out a couple of solo albums, and he never really toured on any of them. But they weirdly, he did do like a few Japanese tours for his second solo album, which is called not War Baby, which was Primitive Cool, not his best solo album, but it's all right. But he did some shows in Japan, and weirdly, they did professionally filmed. Live videos of that to promote that album, and the sound quality, the album quality, and I know because I listened to it on YouTube, and I converted the video to MP3 from YouTube, and it sounds great. So just slap that on a piece of vinyl, man. That would rule. You know, Mick Jagger live in 1988 in Japan, like at the height of Mick Jagger solo. It's great. But I would also say in the punk realm, listen, let's take these let's take these obscure Ramones B-sides. There's at least like 8 or 9 of them. Let's put those on a record. Why not?
You know what I mean? That sounds good. Yeah.
So in the spirit of that, well, first of all, Ricky, always a pleasure talking records with you and great to have you back on the podcast.
Oh, John, thank you for having me back. And by the way, again, just real quick, like, this is not a hate, any sort of hate from me either towards Record Store Day. I love Record Store Day, but Record Store Day Black Friday has just been something I don't particularly participate in a lot. But yeah, thanks for having me. I love talking records. You know, everyone knows probably by now, like I say this every time I'm on, I love talking records on the Punk News podcast. It's always been something, one of my favorite things that I used to do when I was on the staff. So thanks for having me back. And I appreciate it. And go buy records, people. Go to the record store.
Well, say, Ricky, and to prime the pump, let's play a track each, and then we'll close this. We will close this out, and then play a track each. Ricky, what's your final song you're going to play?
All right, so I think I'm going to just keep it simple because that I would play something from that Rancid album, but it's too hard to find stuff that's like digital from it. So I think what I want to do is play one of my favorite Clash songs from London Calling. I think I'm going to play Spanish Bombs.
And I will play the Ramones. I Want to Be Sedated, Ramones on 45 Mega Mix. And we'll see you next week.
Spanish songs in Andalusia. The students hide in the days of 39. The wind and open, Federico Lager, dead and gone, bullet holes in the cemetery wall, the black car of the Guardia of the Beer, Spanish bombs on the Costa Rica, I'm lying in on the DC 10 tonight,
Spanish bombs,
you have to get a bit bonito, you have to quit oh my god, I'm gone,
Spanish bombs,
you have to get a bit bonito. Oh my god, I thought Spanish weeks in my disco casino. The freedom fighters died up on the hill.
They sang the red flag.
They wore the black one after they died. It was Mockingbird Hill.
Back from the buses,
went up in flashes. The Irish too,
drenched in blood. Spanish bombs
shattered the hotels.
A senorita's rose was knitted in the bar.
Bonito,
yo te quiero, oh my corazón.
Spanish bombs,
yo te quiero y bonito,
yo te quiero, oh my corazón.
The hillsides ring with the people. Can I hear the echoes from the days of 39? Bonito, yo te quiero, oh my corazón.
Spanish bombs,
yo te quiero, es bonito, yo te quiero, oh my corazón. Granada.
Oh my God,
oh my God, oh my God, oh my God,
I wanna be sedated. Bam, bam, ba, bam, ba, bam, 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 bam. I
I wanna be suited in. Bam, 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 bam. I wanna be suited in. Bam, 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 bam. I wanna be suited in.
Control my fingers, I can't control my brain.